So, kia ora, everybody. We're very happy to be back here on the Resilient Kids podcast, interviewing another really interesting person who is passionate about the topic that they will bring to this. But first of all, Alex, would you like to introduce yourself?
Gladly. Kia ora, Madeline, and everyone listening in. It's a pleasure to be on the show. My name is Alex Munt. I am a research fellow and a clinical scientist in the Department of Ophthalmology at the University of Auckland. And I sort of focus on clinical and basic research in the area of ocular surface disease, so eye disease, vision. I'm trained as an optometrist and a vision eye scientist, and yeah, lately my focus has been on the effects of screen use on adults and how extended screen use impacts our vision, our eye health, our quality of life ultimately, and how these effects have started to affect younger populations as well.
Okay. And do you have a family yourself, just as a side?
I do, and I am a rookie in all things in life in general and in family things in particular. We have a 2-year-old son. He's
Okay.
quite small. He is currently just back from daycare and has asked for 5 minutes of cartoons,
Right.
to which I said, okay,
Yes.
because there's no way we can avoid a meltdown right now and deal with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what parenting is all about, is getting the balance right, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what do you think that you'd like to talk with us about today?
Well, I think it'd be really interesting to look at some of the work I and my colleagues and here and elsewhere have done over the last couple of years to really bring to light the fact that in terms of health impacts that are have been for the longest time considered, you know, only applicable to a certain population, mostly aging patients, sorry. We now start seeing these in children. And there's interesting links in a developing understanding of what can lead to these conditions. And a lot of that seems to have to do with the fact we lead the way we lead our lives, lifestyle factors, really. And if you think of it, you know, anything you do for a whole day long, whether it's, you know, sitting down or eating candy or breathing in pollutants, will is you know is bound to affect you in a certain way, especially if that lifestyle starts from a very young age. So this seems to be this, you know, the case with screens. All of us have experienced a bit of, you know, dry, gritty eyes at the end of the day after a long day printed with screens. And that sensation is what, you know, is best described as dry eye disease or chronic progressive condition that seems to happen later in life. It's one of the most common eye conditions worldwide. And now, as said, that was typically associated with aging populations. But we now see this increasingly in kids. And a lot of research has come out recently to suggest that there's a strong link between the extent of screen use in kids and the onset of progression of this condition. Now, this is very early research, and there's a lot we don't know. Obviously, we're having to deal with the first generation of kids that have started, you know, doing a lot of screen time from a very young age. But a lot of what we're uncovering and understanding about the mechanism of this condition and the way that screen use affects our eyes, our vision, our bodies, our entire life seems to tie in. And we're seeing these trajectories that, you know, taken over 50 years of continuing doing this, we might expect quite some, you know, quite some dire outcomes. Now, of course, this is not linear. This is not something we've proven, but there are hypotheses and interesting conversations emerging in this space, which is where I'm involved and where I think a discussion is worth having.
So tell me what the problem with it is. You know, what's
The
the what's
problem
the
in a nutshell, is that any sort of cognitively demanding task, visual task, will cause you to blink less. You essentially stop blinking when you focus on something, you know,
Okay.
be it screen time, you know, content obviously matters, be it paying attention to a, you know, to a scene outside, but by blinking less, if you stop blinking now, your eyes will start stinging, and that's your tear, the tear layer on the front of your eyes, with evaporating and stimulating and upsetting your sensitive eye surface. Now, 14 hours of screens each day is essentially a series of staring contests you've lost. So that seems to be the mechanism that is associated with is repeatedly over time, there are fundamental changes in which we blink. And then as a result of that, the way in which the surface of the eye changes in terms of structure and also in terms of function, the various components, glands that produce many components in the tears that protect the eye. And the blinking motion is essentially, we blink about 10,000 times each day. But when you're very engaged on something like screen work, that value can reduce by 90%. Rate, right? So obviously at the end of the day, your eyes will feel dry and watering because your eyes are just constantly producing more tears to wash that stinging sensation away in a sense, right? So it's interesting to note how this changes over a certain time. And there's a lot of clinical measures that we use for the diagnosis and monitoring of this condition in diagnosed patients. But a lot of them seem to tie in with measures we see in kids in relation to extended screen use.
Mm-hmm. And what's the long-term outcome?
The long-term outcome and the issue with dry eye disease in particular, and there are other conditions we can talk about, is a reduced quality of life. Now, you know, if you think of burning eyes, it's like, yeah, that's a bit of a pain. Doesn't sound like the end of the world, but the truth is that people who suffer from this condition, more severe forms, are actually unable to open their eyes for long periods of time. They're unable to do, you know, visual tasks, be it use a computer, read, step outside, work, go to the office. So there's a significant burden because of the prevalence of this condition and because of its impacts in later stages of the disease. There's a significant impact on quality of life. Mm-hmm. Vision is disturbed, and a lot of the very severe patients are actually, there's a strong associations with depression, with anxiety. We have patients with suicidal ideation calling in, which is quite scary. Now, backing up, I'm not saying that screen use in kids will lead to a condition of that severity, but these are risk factors, right? And the more we understand about this and other conditions, the more we realize that there's a lot that we do that factors into the development of this condition. And no one will know, or you know, by the time we will know exactly what is happening, it may be too late for some of us, because some of us seem to be more at risk than
okay.
others.
And you're seeing this happen more and more with younger children?
That's right. There's different levels of evidence, of course. I mean, your experience is evidence, and then clinicians on the ground we work with here in Auckland and elsewhere report seeing, you know, young children in their chairs in clinics, which is unusual. Mm-hmm. That's where their grandparents used to sit. And then we're seeing a lot of peer-reviewed solid scientific evidence, including one of our recent studies in 2019 we've done here in Auckland, looking at gamers, at young gamers. And we saw that self-reported measures of screen time, the longer hours they use on screens for gaming, schoolwork, everything taken together, the poorer their performance in terms of eye health, comfort, quality of life, all of these measures correlated with these things. Mm-hmm. And now and that was before the pandemic. And of course, you know, screen time has skyrocketed for a large proportion of the last couple of years. Some of it has gone back, thankfully. I think we'll be ebbing and flowing a lot, and we're seeing lots of little blips in terms of screen use. But it's I think it's a good, rather than, you know, being alarmist and adding more anxiety, more fuel to the fire, many anxieties we have at the moment as parents and as people. I think it's just a good time to have this discussion and to reassess some of the things we take for granted in terms of, you know, what is okay to do for us versus younger ones. Mm-hmm. And to actually look at the evidence emerging, not just in the area of dry disease, which is my immediate research focus, but also broader health implications, social, educational outcomes that seem to, you know, tie in with extended screen use from a young age, and take stock of that and decide, well, how are we moving forward in this? Mm-hmm. How are we building some resilience, some barriers, some guidance, some support for a safer use of screens, while, you know, making the best of the amazing tools that they are.
Of course. Before we go on to looking at that part of, you know, what we can do about this, you also talked about the fact that there are a couple of other problems coming through around screen use. Could you talk about those as well?
Sure. Yeah, and it's really interesting to mention the, you know, the lockdowns and the pandemic, because if anything, if there's any good in the last, you know, 2 years with lockdowns worldwide, it's been that they've provided really fertile ground for a whole host of interesting scientific studies because of the controlled nature of...
It's always a bonus, right?
yeah, there's got to be a flip side to all of this. And thankfully, there was. And we're seeing in the last couple of months, dozens upon dozens of solid studies emerge from all over the world to show, not suggest, clearly show that there's been a significant shift in short-sightedness following young kids spending a lot of time indoors in front of screens. And again, I don't want to vilify screens about, but yeah. this just very nicely confirms what we know about short-sightedness or myopia. If as a kid, you spend a lot of time inside, away from sunlight, doing near work, which these days happen to be screen time, you are at risk of progressing myopia, short-sightedness. Mm-hmm. If your parents are myopic, you have a genetic predisposition and, you know, again, your lifestyle factors will potentially activate some of those genes. So what you do all day matters. And for 2 years or the better part of that, we've been stuck inside in front of screens because there's nothing else to do. And we've seen a significant shift in myopia. So more kids are wearing glasses worldwide. By 2050, we're expecting half of the world's population to be short-sighted. Mm-hmm. Many parts of Asia, in developed parts of Asia, we're seeing proportions of 99 up to 100% of prevalence in myopia in teenagers. This has been ongoing for a long time before screens. We know this. Staying inside away from natural sunlight and doing near work. Now, with screen time, obviously, there's a big change because they both keep you inside and stuck in front of the screen. So I guess, you know, a major piece that's missing from the general understanding is that high myopia, so myopia that progresses past a certain number of diopters, is not just a condition where you need glasses and you have poor eyesight. It's actually excessive growth of the eye, because this is what this condition is, that leads to tension at the back of the eye, the sensitive structure, the retina, experience tears. So you develop glaucoma, cataracts, macular degeneration. These are blinding conditions that are not easily solvable with a pair of glasses, contact lenses, or surgery. And there's now ways that we've, you know, found we can slow down that progression. It is irreversible, but there's ways you can slow it down if you catch it early on enough. And these kids enter these interventions, which are safe and seem to work. But parents need to be, educators and clinicians need to be aware of this, catch it early on, and then start these preventive treatments. Process to avoid, you know, not necessarily the risk of blinding disease, but significant impact of quality of life. And someone who wears, you know, a pair of glasses -3, like myself, it is just, you know, poor vision is among the leading, globally leading disability burdens, economically, socially. So, you know, again, this has been solid proof to show that what we do all day matters. And myopia is just one of the many effects that have started to emerge in the peer-reviewed scientific literature on effects of extended screen use in youth from a young age. And they range, you know, we can get into obesity, we can talk about posture, we can talk about educational outcomes that seem to be correlated to that, social factors, cognitive, anxiety, depression, all sorts. It's a messy area, right? It's a recent area. But it's interesting to see that some places around the world are taking a bit of more restrictive, eliminating approach in this sense, particularly in education, because it's easier to control. Parents are, you know, overwhelmed with everything and screens in particular. But I think it's worth having a discussion, taking a look at this very fuzzy landscape of emerging evidence of different levels of quality and taking stock of what we do.
So given that you have a 2-year-old, what's your best advice to yourself?
I think it's just being reasonable and developing a bit of an understanding of these impacts and keeping a close eye on myself, a partner, that, you know, the examples we give, the way we sort of respond, our bodies respond to screen use, and how our son responds to it. Is I think the ultimate aim of striking that individual balance. There is absolutely no way that we can come up with a magical number for maximum hours of screen time each day for your kids. It's like, yes, if, you know, WHO said 1 hour max for 2 year olds, 2 to 5, I think, and then upwards from there, or rather no screen time at the age of 2, an hour between 2 to 5 and upwards from there. That's, you know, sounds reasonable, but it's not always easy to implement. But that's just a very, very rough guideline. But it's about it's a bit about having that balance, and I think it's recognizing that it's not the screen per se that causes the damage most often, aside from, you know, excessive use, as I've mentioned before with eyesight. But it's the fact that they dislocate a lot of the other activities that constitute a balanced lifestyle, socializing, outdoor time, physical play, all of these things that make up a rich life, and I think screens are part of it. As long as you are able to tick off most of these boxes, not every day, but on average, on a rolling, you know, 7 day average or whichever way, and it fits in with the way you lead your life and you want your family to lead their lives, I think they have a place in moderation.
And so if you were to talk about a 2 year old, do you think that as a dad, you live by those more or less World Health Organization guidelines, or how does it work for you?
I think we're right there. Probably he doesn't get more than an hour of screen time each day. Sometimes we've even managed to go, you know, I want to watch cartoons 5 minutes. He has no clue what 5 minutes is.
No.
But when I say it's over, then he'll gladly just stop it and do something else. And mm-hmm. it may be something we do in the evening when we're all, you know, done. And just before yeah. bedtime, you have 10 minutes of cartoons. But that's easy. And it's easy for me to say with a 2-year-old, I have absolutely no clue what it must mean to manage a teenager.
Sure. So having had 3, I know a little bit about that. And, I've talked previously to someone else who, you know, trying to get one of our kids off, and we used to unplug the Wi-Fi. But then
how did that go?
Well, he ended up buying his own decoder. You know, they're always going to outsmart you, right?
Yeah, it can lead to war. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a bit of a hoot. But, you know, being able to have those conversations, and I think that what you're talking about around making sure that we're not doing the displace, we are doing the things that we would normally be doing, like the big muscle play, getting outside, giving our eyes the opportunity to look into the horizon, giving our bodies the opportunity to stretch and to move, because that's what our bodies were designed to do. They weren't designed to sit in one place for a very, very long time. But our lifestyle is tricky, isn't it?
Exactly, and it's tempting to take this. I forget what it was called. Panadol Nation. No, it was something along the lines of palliative care. It's like whenever this, you know, the slightest inconvenience or pain, you'll mm-hmm. take a Panadol or a
sure.
So it's really quite easy. And there's interventions that we know work. You know, you mm-hmm. can work to improve your blinking. Mm-hmm. We've done really interesting research where we send people off to do blinking exercises.
Okay.
Blink exercises, you know, over a course of a month, and they come back with significantly improved symptoms mm-hmm. and clinical signs. It's like, it works. You can train your breathing. You can train your posture, like you said. Mm. But when it comes to younger ones, it's I think it's worth thinking twice of whether you're essentially delivering the message, it's fine to spend 10 hours a day as long as you do these exercises. I think the reality is that you need to strike for that balance, and you need to make sure that they're having a balanced lifestyle with everything that would, you know, otherwise normally just crowd out screen time out of the day. There won't be much time left. But if you say, oh, there's these drops and these pills and these things you can take in order for you to beat 10,000 screens, that's quite tempting and not necessarily in our best favor. And I think there's an angle we can take to say, well, you know, it's a big responsibility of parents, but there's only so much you can do. If your kid's spending 6 hours at school doing screen work, and then they have 4 more hours of homework, then they want to do maybe an hour or two of gaming and socializing and playing with their friends, and that's your day. So I guess we need to think about having and taking the conversations to a higher level where we're really questioning whether, you know, for instance, a primary school student, a kid needs to be on a device for 8 hours a day, right?
And I understand that New Zealand has one of the highest school use of screens. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it's another big can of worms, of course, and we won't have time to get into all of it. But like you said, we have amongst the world's highest rates of screen use and internet use in the world, OECD level, including at primary level, where we're seeing schools go full digital immersion from day one. Bring your own device, homeworks online entirely. And there's reports emerging worldwide, including from here in New Zealand, from some of the people that were involved in this work, to suggest that a cautious approach is warranted for the young ones, especially when looking at cognitive outcomes or education outcomes. The more screen use you do, if it's not supervised or co-used with an educator, you're likely to not get great outcomes out of that, mm-hmm. In reading and maths. So there's stronger and stronger links. And elsewhere in Europe, Asia, parts of America, parts of Australia, I believe we're seeing this more cautious approach. Whereas in New Zealand, I don't think we have anything such as guidelines or recommendations or anything like that educators, parents, kids can rely on if they so choose. Mm-hmm. It's tough to enforce these things, and I don't think we'll come to that because it's just such a complex area. The ways we use the different types of devices, contents that. You know, we're all very unique in our user profiles. So I think what we need is some evidence-based guidelines with strong tips and recommendations around the things we can do. Mm-hmm. Such as, for instance, focusing on your blinking or improving your posture. The simple rules of thumb, like you said, every 20 minutes taking a 20-second break to look at something to give your eyes a bit of a rest. Making sure that young ones get at least 2 hours of sunlight each day, because we know that ensures a minimum necessary for the healthy development of the eye, and so on, right? So mm-hmm. there's all of these practical tips, if you will, that could come together and communicated adequately at different levels could do a lot of good. And maybe starting in schools where again we have a fairly fertile breeding ground for such conversations might be a good idea, mm. rather than at home where you're left to your own devices and that's your free time. And
so is there any way anywhere that parents can access those practical tips that you were just talking about?
To my understanding, they're in development. There's various groups that work in this area, and I'm lucky to be part of a group called Sensible Screen Use. .org is the website, so Sensible Screen Use, one word, .org. And this is a loose but strong knit community of educators, scientists, clinicians, and experts in this area. They're working together to sift through the research and to bring it to light, to communicate it in an accessible, understandable fashion to the public, and to help with the development of something that may resemble some guidelines and recommendations.
Nice.
It's slow work. It's hard, slow work. But we're hoping that by having the right conversations, we'll be able to not to make a change, but to create the environment for that discussion. Hopefully, change it.
I also know that a guy called Tano Benz has a nice little podcast called Tech Life Balance, and so that's also a useful resource for parents to access.
Excellent, yes.
So, Alexis, what else would you like to tell us before we finish off today?
Oh, gosh, I feel like I've been talking a lot.
That's the point, isn't it?
What have I missed? I think it's worth closing off on a sort of positive and hopeful note, because as mentioned, I think parents of young kids in particular, that's really not the last drop we need in a full glass of worries and anxiety for the future of our kids, and that this work we do can, especially with fresh emerging research where these kind of stark or threatening directions are showing, doesn't necessarily mean that they'll materialize. They might if we do absolutely nothing at all, if we're unlucky enough to see excuse me, the equivalent of 20 more years of lockdowns. I don't want us to be alarmist about this. I think it's worth being curious about these effects and trying to understand more and being really being fascinated and interested in these topics because they are drastic ways in which we have changed our lives. And there's all sorts of analogies we could pull and use, and they're all useful in their own right. But it's, you know, it's not the new smoking. We often heard that sitting is a new smoking. It's like, you know, yes, it can be, but it's worth thinking outside of that narrow metaphor, analogy, or box, and to look at our own lives and to seek that balance, which is harder to find for you as an individual or a family, and tougher to grasp as a collective entity for all of us, which is where we'll fail if we cling on to that and hope that will be the saving light, because it won't. Screens are here to stay, and I think there's lots we can gain from them, but we're in the early phases. I think we're in the very early times of our relationships with these devices, of our understanding with them, and I think there's a lot we'll have to gain, and I'm sure we'll learn how to use them well and safely.
So thank you so very much for spending the time talking with me today and giving this really vital information to parents so that they can help ensure that their children have healthy eyes and that they grow to be able to manage the life that they've got before them in a resilient and competent way. And good luck with the rest of your research and keep doing it, because we need that knowledge.
It's been my pleasure, Madeline. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today and for sharing your fabulous ideas. Remember, if you want some more support, please go to www.resilientkids.org.nz. Reach out. I'm really happy to reply to an email if you're wanting resources, and or to pick up some support through coaching or our online parenting course. Go well. Take care. Thank you.